When you're building a business, you might make a lot of revenue, but if you're not making any profit, you're working for free. Revenue feeds the ego, profits feed the family.
Welcome to the Bedros Koulian Show.
Back when Q was rolling with Lorenzo and a Benzo, I was banging with a gang of instrumentals. Hey friends, I'm Bedros Koulian, and this is the Bedros Koulian Show. Welcome to the show, because today we're going to talk about something really important that you guys have been bringing up. I guess here we are now, more than 6 months into the Bedros Koulian Show, and what I hear from you guys is, hey, what are the types of businesses I could start if I want to have financial freedom, if I want to make a lot of money, if I want to have impact and be able to maybe create my own financial outcome in life, right? Which is cool, because the whole idea of the Bedros Koulian Show is to create sovereignty, freedom, free thinkers, get you physically, mentally, emotionally jacked, right? But there's also the financial jacked portion of it. And so we're going to talk about that today, guys. And I want to talk to you about my favorite types of businesses. Many of you know that I'm an entrepreneur. If I had a zone of genius, if there was an area that I excelled at in life that was almost factory installed for me, it would be the ability to make money. I am good at seeing trends, finding opportunities, connecting dots that create money in exchange for value, right? What I wasn't good at was leadership. And you know, if you've read my book, Man Up, you know that my downfall as a leader, I almost lost my franchise, Fit Body Bootcamp, right? And so that was really the beginning of the 2.0 version of myself, as I started to build the better version of myself, the leader, the healed entrepreneur, the stoic entrepreneur, the more productive, disciplined, structured entrepreneur. And that really helped take all my businesses, seven of them in total, to a whole new level of success. And it's not of any other reason other than those traits that I just listed off that my businesses have broken collectively the $100 million a year mark, but my ability to create money across many different industries is what I'm going to use today in this episode to really give you some guidance on what types of businesses you could start that might fit your lifestyle. Or if you have an idea and you're like, man, how would Bedros coach me? Here's your chance to get some coaching from me in terms of that. So let's jump in. So before we really jump in, though, I really want to talk to you about this $126,000 lesson that I learned. And that lesson is this. There was a time that I borrowed in total $126,000 from a mentor, Jim Franco. I've talked about Jim Franco before. You'll see his name mentioned in my book, Man Up. He was my rich dad, right? If the father that brought me here to the United States, my real dad is my poor dad. And when I say that with all the love and respect. Like, I love my dad to pieces. He risked his life and brought us here, but he really didn't understand how money worked. He didn't understand the financial system. He didn't understand anything other than trading his time for dollars. And so over time, about 4 or 5 years being here in the United States, he was able to open up a tiny little tailor shop in Anaheim, California. And that led to him trading his time for dollars, working 12, 13 hour days as a tailor in his own store. Yes, he was his own boss, but he certainly, I wouldn't call him an entrepreneur. I would say he owned a job, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, if you're like, listen, man, I just want to be my own boss, I'm going to tell you some ideas of where you could own a job, have at least have the freedom to travel the world. My dad didn't have that freedom because he had to come and open up his little tailor shop, and he had to be there for when people brought clothes in for him to alter and fix, right? But at least if you're going to own a job, there are jobs that have higher profit margins that create a better lifestyle and allow you to travel and experience the world if that is what you want. But then, remember, as I became a personal trainer and I was struggling as a personal trainer, one of my first personal training clients was this older gentleman named Jim Franco. And Jim Franco owned a company called Autolog. And Autolog created the software for these auto parts stores, right? So you go to like a Pep Boys or an AutoZone, and you and you might say, hey, look, I've got a, you know, 2010 Honda Accord and I need an oil filter for it. And they punch it up in that software and that computer and they go, here's the part number you need. Jim Franco's company created the software and updates the software as new and more recent model year cars come out. So anyways, when Jim Franco became a personal training client of mine, he began to mentor me, to coach me in the ways of being an entrepreneur. And I saw that there's really sky's the limit. And so he empowered me to start my own gym, my own personal training studio. And that led to me creating this software ultimately called High Tech Trainer. High Tech Trainer at the time, before there was these good old, you know, I guess phones like iPhones and Androids and all that, there was Palm Pilots, if you remember. And Palm Pilots were, I guess, a little organizer that you carried. It was digital. You can, you know, check your emails on. You could connect to the internet in a very archaic way. You could even schedule and keep track of your calendar, right? But when the iPhones came out, they completely changed the landscape. And Palm Pilots and PDAs is what they were called, personal digital organizers, I think is what they were called. Anyway, PDAs, personal digital assistants. They just went away. But High Tech Trainer was meant to be a software that lived on a Palm Pilot that we would have in gyms all over the country, big box gyms, and you would pay an extra fee to a gym and you would check out your Palm Pilot and it had your High Tech Trainer workout on it, right? So instead of working with a personal trainer that costs a lot of money, if you couldn't afford a personal trainer, that gym would sell you, let's say for another $99 more per month, they would sell you that service where you could check out your Palm Pilot and walk around the gym and do your program right then and there. So before apps and all that, like I had created an online workout platform and I didn't even know it, right? Called High Tech Trainer. The big lesson here for you is that, two big lessons. I started to borrow, you know, $20,000 from Jim Franco, and then that led to another $20,000 and then another $25,000. Before you know it, it added up, and over about a 3-year period, I had borrowed $126,000 and I had yet to have a finished product. And one day, Jim Franco came to me and he said, hey kid, I need to see you in my office. Now he had this big giant office, very similar to what I have today. In fact, I realize sometimes I modeled my life after Jim Franco's. I look up to him so much. But he came to me because I had this little cubicle in the back corner of one of the older side of his office. And I would work out of that one cubicle like a little rented mule. And while I was designing and creating, I wasn't selling. And so High Tech Trainer kept accumulating debt. And one day he comes to me and he says, hey, when you reach a stopping point, come talk to me in my office. And I did. And right then and there is when he said, hey, you need to, we need to have a come to Jesus conversation. I said, what is that about? And he goes, you need to figure out how you're going to pay me my $126,000 because I'm done loaning you money. Now you've got to start selling and producing money, right? And that's when I realized that I can create and create and create all day long, but unless I launch and start marketing and selling, I'm never going to get this product off the ground. And unfortunately, little did I know that just around the corner, right, about 3 years out, was going to be the launch of the iPhone. Back in 2007, the iPhone was going to launch and it was going to completely destroy this business model of workouts on a Palm Pilot, on a PDA. And so that was a very expensive lesson. And sadly, High Tech Trainer never really launched fully. Because of the PDAs going away, we turned it into an online personal training software where you could kind of email yourself workouts and watch downloadable workouts or workout demonstration videos and then go do them in the gym. And while it made like $20,000 a month, by the time I paid myself a little bit of money, gave Jim Franco money every month to cover that $126,000 debt, and then paid the programmers that I had, it wasn't even worth running it. So once I paid off Jim Franco, I decided to just shut her down and told my business partners, the other business partners, I said, hey, buy me out for whatever you think is fair. I'm just burnt out from this and done. So the big lesson for you there is to not borrow money and start using other people's money to create, 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 and never launch, because they might just have a come to Jesus conversation with you like Jim Franco had with me. And I'd never even heard that term, the come to Jesus conversation. And when he had that conversation with me, reality hit that there is no more asking Jim Franco for money. from this point forward, if I'm going to pay programmers, I need to sell the product and produce money to be able to live off of, to be able to pay my programmers, etc., right? So there's a big lesson for you. Like, find a way to sell your product early on. And if you can't, then find a way to incentivize your programmers to take some kind of equity and work for free in exchange for back-end money so that you don't put yourself in massive debt like I did, which really caused a lot of stress and anxiety for many years and might come up years, right? So with that said, let's jump into the types of business that I like and that you might actually want to start. So I'm going to break it down into three categories: products, like product industry, manufacturing industry, and service industry. So let's get started with the product industry first. And the product industry is pretty cool because, you know, for example, t-shirts, right? Like Fuel Hunt. Fuel Hunt makes t-shirts, makes apparel, makes hats, makes fight wear, and high quality stuff, but gotta have all the different sizes, all the different colors, all the different SKUs, all the different designs. And so when you're in the product industry, you're in a business where you constantly have to create new designs and new products in order to get those customers to buy again. Nothing wrong with the product industry, just letting you know, whether it's hats, shoes, apparel, water bottles, it doesn't matter, gloves, right? The product industry means you have to produce or purchase stuff first. So you're putting money out first, purchasing it, putting it on a shelf, and then you are selling it for a profit. And I'll give you another great example, Trulene Supplements, my supplement company, great supplement brand, right? However, when we manufacture supplements, we don't just buy one bottle at a time. We might buy several thousand bottles of one flavor of protein, right? So if we've got Dutch chocolate, we've got vanilla, we've got strawberry, well, we might buy several thousands of each, and it goes to our fulfillment warehouse and it stays on a shelf, and then we start selling it. But remember, we put that money out to the manufacturer who made it for us, following our ingredient model, right? We bought the containers, the labels, we packaged it all up. It got shipped to our warehouse. And now, after we put all that money out, we were able to sell the product online for a profit. And so understand that when you're in the product industry, you have to have a lot of capital, a lot of money, because you are parking a lot of money on shelves and then selling that product for a profit, at which point you can start reusing that money to invest in more product and, of course, to invest in your lifestyle as well. So that's thing one, product industry, right? Then there's manufacturing. So let's say you might manufacture, swords or axes, right? At the project we give away, all the graduates get a project axe with their project class number on it, burnt into the handle. And on the other side, it says the project, like somebody manufactured that specific thing, right? So if you're making things, if you're manufacturing this table here, if you're manufacturing a microphone, you're in a process of an assembly line where you're building things out, you're manufacturing cars, right? Like Ford, GM, Dodge, they manufacture vehicles. The dealerships sell a product, right? So when Ford manufactures a vehicle, they're in the manufacturing industry. They take parts and pieces that they buy from everywhere, put it together, create a car or a truck, and then they sell those trucks and cars to a dealership, and the dealership sees that car or truck as a product. So you see how something can go from a manufacturing to a product very quickly, right? Manufacturing means you have to now get equipment. You have to have big, giant warehouse floor space. Like, your footprint has to be big enough to manufacture. Like right now, Trulene is not big enough. Well, it's an eight-figure company. It's not big enough for us to do our own manufacturing, for me to start like a manufacturing plant and create our own greens and wellness and protein powders from scratch, right? So right now we go to a manufacturing plant and we go, hey, here's our recipe. Here's how you're gonna create it from scratch. And so let's say 3 days out of the week, they are making protein and greens and wellness shots for Trulene. But then the next 2 days, they might make it for a smaller supplement company. Then the next 4 days, they might make it for a bigger supplement company. The bottom line is they are manufacturers. They have machines and equipment. They buy stuff by the tons. And by the time it gets to us, it becomes a product for us to sell. So understand that manufacturing is very labor intensive and requires even more financial capital than a product business. And finally, there is the service industry. The service industry is pretty cool because, now keep in mind, all of these also come with different benefits. The product industry, for example, whether it's Fuel Hunt or Trulene or a company that sells water bottles like Hydro Flask, right? Let's say, remember, as these companies get big enough, there's private equity out there and there's competitors out there that might want to buy them out, right? And so if you're in the, you're of the mindset that, hey, I might want to one day sell my business, then guess what? You could sell a product like brand that way. You got to get big enough and you can sell your product for a multiple of whatever, 5x, 7x, 10x. I'm also an investor in a software company. That software is actually being shopped around right now and we're likely to get anywhere from 12 to 15x the EBITDA, basically the quarterly profits. You add them up and make them into annual profits. The annual profits, imagine getting 15x that when you go to sell, right? So the cool thing about a product or about a manufacturing plant is you could sell to a bigger conglomerate who wants to buy you as you get bigger, right? Now services, you can do the same thing with services, but not all the time. And so let's talk about that. There are services, for example, that are one-off services. My coaching service, I have a business coaching and consulting service, right? The 12-month domination year. Someone pays me $100,000. They get 2 half-day sessions with me, one on month number one, one on month number six. We do our monthly phone coaching calls, etc. And I help them scale their business even bigger. That coaching business, no matter how profitable and big it gets, I'm trading time for dollars. That's thing number one. Thing number two is it's me dependent. I have to be running it and therefore I can't sell it. So coaching shows up in a lot of ways. Maybe you do marriage coaching, business coaching. Maybe you do fitness coaching, nutrition coaching, mindset coaching. You might do high performance coaching, right? Like psychological coaching, helping people get over their shit. Whatever it is that you do, that's a service. It's a coaching business. Now, can you scale a coaching business? Absolutely. I also have a coaching business. It's a fitness coaching business that I run with my business partner and he's a project graduate. His name is Byron. The program is called Battle Ready. It's a 90-day fitness and fat loss program for men who want to get lean, jacked, and battle ready, like the battle for life, right? The battle for life, the battle for becoming your best self. Now, with that, Byron has the leadership position in it, and he's got a couple of salespeople under him, and he's got some coaches under him. And the more customers and clients we get into Battle Ready, the more coaches we can scale that can deliver the service, right? So not all coaching businesses are personality dependent. Like the one that I told you about where, you know, you're paying me $100,000. Could you imagine paying $100,000 to work with me for a year? And then I go, hey, you're going to work with my assistant. Are you going to work with this right-hand person? Are you going to work with that person? You'd be like, wait a minute, man, I just paid all this money to Bedros to work with him. Why can't I work with him? And so those businesses aren't necessarily sellable. But businesses like, let's say, Battle Ready are. So I don't know if you follow any of my coaching clients, but for example, Rachel Shear, she's a coaching client. She has she does gut health, right? So if you got leaky gut issues, if you've got like distension, if you can't digest your food well, you're foggy headed, whatever, and it's a byproduct of your gut, well, guess what? She's a registered dietitian and she is a nutrition coach and she has 5 or 6 other coaches under her. She is the face of the brand. You come on board and you pay an X dollar amount to work with her coaches and her coaches will get you the result, but she's the face of it. Like that is scalable, right? We took her from $9,000 a month when she was a one-person show, right? Trading time for dollars to now multiple 6 figures a month in revenue for her because she's got 5 other coaches under her. She's got 2 salespeople under her. And then she's also got a director of operations, Mike, who oversees the operations, allowing Rachel, the way I coached her was, so that she can be the face of the business. And so I've got many clients like that. So make no mistake about it that a service business can be scalable, but it requires you having a team under you, right? Another type of service business is franchising, right? I also own Fit Body Bootcamp, right? We have hundreds of locations all over the world. They're about 3,000 to 4,000 square foot locations. You go in there, you get an awesome 30 minute workout, functional workouts designed to burn fat, build muscle in 30 minutes, group coaching program, awesome program. It's definitely a service, but it's a franchise. Every location is independently owned and operated. What I do as the franchisor is I sell the franchisee the concept. We go, hey, here's a proven concept, and we're going to coach you and tell you exactly where to find a location, how to sign the lease, how to negotiate that lease, how to build out your location, how to open, how to hire your coaches, how to hire staff, how to price it, et cetera, all of it. How to do the marketing, and we also help you do the marketing. That's the beautiful thing about a franchise. Doesn't matter if it's a Subway sandwich franchise or Jersey Mike's or a Jiffy Lube. Could be a yogurt franchise, a fitness franchise like Fit Body Bootcamp. You're selling a system, and therefore, that location is independently owned and operated, but that location is paying me, the franchisor, a monthly royalty fee because of the systems and the support and the processes we're giving them, right? They don't have to do the guesswork. They don't have to problem solve. They don't have to figure things out because the franchise system has already figured that out. We've already figured that out and we coach them through it, right? So very similar to Rachel Shear's business of coaching and having coaches like upstairs at our headquarters for Fit Body Bootcamp, we've got from sales reps to a whole bunch of coaches to help our new owners find a location, build it out, open up, sign a lease, hire trainers, everything you need to do to get successful. That is a sellable business. The business that Rachel has, for example, even though it's scaled, so think about that. It's Rachel and she's got coaches under her and she scaled it. Is that really sellable? Probably not, because it's dependent on Rachel's personality. Like, you're buying into that business model because you saw Rachel on a podcast, you heard her on a stage, you follow her on social media, you watch her YouTube show, and you're like, you know what? I want to work with this person. Like, she seems to have the solution to my health issues. So I'm gonna reach out. And so you reach out, you talk to one of her team members, they go, hey, we can help you. Rachel's created a process. We're gonna give you one of her coaches. Now, if you wanna work with Rachel, you can. It costs you like $4,000 or $5,000 more for the same program, right? So, but if you're like, hey, I really wanna work with Rachel and that's it, you can. But she's got coaches, and that makes it more affordable to work with those coaches, and she can scale that way. And if she goes to, let's say, 7 figures a month, right? Let's say she starts doing $1 million a month, she might have 15, 20 coaches under her. But is that business sellable? Well, probably, maybe yes, maybe no, but it's gonna be harder to sell because it is dependent on Rachel's personality. If the face of that brand goes away, can it still be sustained? That's questionable. Probably not, right? So understand, as you're building a business, you also have to start looking at it, whether it's a product, manufacturing, or service. Is this going to be sellable? Am I going to want to sell it in the future? If I don't want to sell it, what's my plan? Do I have someone in line to succeed me? Do I have a family member I could pass it down to? Do I have my kids I can pass it down to? Do my kids even want to run it? Right? And if they don't, then what do I do? So my theory is always this: build businesses so that you can sell, ideally, but if you can't sell it, then they better at least be a very high profiting business so that if and when you're done doing that, you can step away from it and not feel any loss from it because you made so many years of such great income and it really helped you leverage yourself. And I'll give you a great example. And Rachel wouldn't mind me sharing this. And actually, I'll give you an example of another coaching client. Her name is Ashley. Ashley owns five locations. Ashley Lucas, she owns 5 locations of PhD weight loss, high-end weight loss services, right? And her whole thing was, I got these 5 locations, but now I want to also create an online, PhD online, where I can help people all over the world. They don't just have to be in one of the 5 cities that we're located in. And so we helped her scale that. I mean, let's just say she's doing really well, pretty much hitting about just over $1 million a month is where she is in revenue. And she's going to continue to scale. Like, she's just getting started, and it's a blast working with her. But her business model, very similar to Rachel's, except she's not the face of it, meaning she's the CEO, she's the visionary, she's the leader, but the advertising happens through radio and TV personalities, right? The way she's marketing is very different. The way I've got her marketing is through radio personalities that talk about the service because they use the service, they lost the weight, they feel better. And so they go, hey, go to PhD Weight Loss, right? Or if you can't find one locally, go to PhD Weight Loss online and you can work with them remotely for weight loss. Now, because there's no personality, Ashley's face isn't attached to it. In some ways it is. She has a podcast and she has a YouTube channel, but she's not so attached to it where all of the leads and all of the traffic, all of the marketing leads are attached to her. And because of that, that business is way more sellable than Rachel's. But does that mean that Rachel's doing something wrong? Absolutely not. Does that mean I'm doing something wrong with my Domination Year coaching program that's not even scalable? It's just me, right? Trading time for dollars? No, because I get to work with 49 private coaching clients who I really love, adore, and can really focus on their business. And that gets me off. But I also have other business that are scalable and they're automated. So now let's talk about that as I get a little sip of the old wellness shot here. So now that we know you can break businesses down into businesses that you can sell and businesses that you might want to hold on to and businesses that are product-based, manufacturing-based, and of course, service-based, let's talk about scaling factors, right? What are the things that you can do to scale a business? Well, number one, you got to ask yourself, can I delegate this? So going back to Rachel Shear, can she delegate some of the services? Yeah, she can delegate the marketing. She can delegate the sales. She can delegate the coaching services. So if you can delegate, then you can grow, right? And this is why, for example, we have several Fitbody Bootcamp owners that own multiple locations. They own multiple Fitbody Bootcamp locations because they can delegate. That franchisee bought a location from us and first operated as a owner-operator. Then they bought another location from us in another territory, and now they got a second location, third location, fourth location. Like my friend Ben Jones has 8 locations throughout Arizona. He has 8 Fitbody Bootcamp locations. He is delegating and scaling by putting a facility manager in every Fitbody Bootcamp that he opens, right? That facility manager obviously manages that location and does the sales. There's also an assistant working the front desk, and then there are coaches who run the Fitbody Bootcamp classes. Of course, we call them sessions and not classes, but they're group sessions where 1 to 2 coaches will run a group of 20, 30, 40, 50 clients through an awesome 30-minute workout that's functional, that's fat burning, and it's like this, it's scalable, right? So that is very important, is can I delegate? That is, delegation is a scale factor. What else is a scale factor? Can I automate a process, right? If you can automate a process, that allows you to scale. If you can, for example, go from narrow to wide, in other words, narrow means, all right, let's say this is a coaching program just for men. Here's a great example, The Project. I run The Project. It is a coaching program for men who are high speed, who feel like there's a greater sense of purpose waiting for them on the other side of their limiting beliefs that they need to break through. Like, that is a very specific type of man I'm looking for. The dude who's suffering in silence, white knuckling through life, has greater purpose and he knows it, but he knows it's on the other side of getting over his limiting beliefs. And limiting belief could be a byproduct of trauma. It could be a limiting belief of a story he told himself. It could be a limiting belief of just like, hey, like me, he came from a foreign country. And so he believes that as an immigrant, I'm supposed to be broke, and not necessarily, but he still feels that gnawing in him. That is a very narrow market. Now, can I scale that to a wider audience? Possibly. Like if I wanted to work with more types of people, I might be able to change the messaging and say, hey, this is for all men. Right? All men. Doesn't matter if you're an entrepreneur. It doesn't matter if you have a job. This is for all men. I could even go wider. I might say, hey, this is for men and women, right? But I also know that the quality of the service and the outcome, the results that it would deliver would diminish if I went wider on that market space. So I keep the project clientele very narrow. I go very narrow and deep. But there are some industries that you ask yourself, hey, can I go wide? As in, you know, both genders, now maybe even all 19 genders, right? Number one. Number two, can I have different age groups that I could sell to? That's another wide. Do I have different ways of marketing? That's another way of going wide. So think about that as you're starting a business. Can I go wide in terms of my reach? And if so, then you got yourself another opportunity there to scale. Also, can it be delivered in a group environment instead of one-on-one, right? Great example of scaling. You can have a gym that does one-on-one personal training, but the cost of your overhead cost is going to be through the roof. It's going to be super expensive, right? Because you're paying all these individual personal trainers to run one-on-one personal training sessions, which means your payroll is going to be through the roof. Whereas Fitbody Bootcamp is scalable because it's one-on-many. We do it in a group environment. One trainer to 15 clients, two trainers to 30 clients, three trainers or coaches, as we call them, to 45 clients. And you see how it becomes scalable, right? And so you have to ask yourself, can it be done in a group? Right? And another scale factor then is, can it be sold through affiliates? Can it be sold by others? In other words, if it can be sold through affiliates by others, through referral marketing, a great example of that is anything that's multi-level marketing. Now, I have a resistance to multi-level marketing. That doesn't mean that that's what you should also feel. I just don't like multi-level marketing because it ain't my thing. I've had a few bad experiences with it, and I'm not interested in going to my brother and my cousin and my sister and my uncle and saying, hey, you ought to do this. And if you buy this product and you're under me and then you keep selling it, then I get to make more money and you get to make more money, then you get more people under you and they get to make, that ain't me. That ain't me, right? But that is a true scalable business model, affiliates, multi-level marketing, where you can use others to get more people into your business. So that's a scale factor. Now let's talk about profit maximizers, because I want you to understand something here. When you're building a business, you might make a lot of revenue, but if you're not making any profit, you're working for free. Revenue feeds the ego, profits feed the family. Never forget that. What I mean by that is, I know a guy that had a business that did $140 million a year in sales, but his personal income was about $120,000 a year. The business was doing $140 million a year in sales, but his personal income was under $150,000. And the reason for that was his cost of goods were high. His operational costs were high. His marketing costs were high. His payroll was high. His liability insurance was high. There was so much expense eating away at that revenue that there was no profits left at the end of the month. And therefore, he could have gone and gotten himself a sales job and made more money doing sales than he was running a $140 million company, right? So understand that profitability is the reason we become entrepreneurs, so that we can control the amount of money we get to take home and live off of and do good things with and give our family experiences with, right? So here are some profit maximizers for you. Think about this. You might ask yourself, can this product have levels to it, right? So another coaching client of mine, Tony Steffen, he had a certification program. And he had a level one certification. And I was like, dude, let's create a level two certification where you teach them this other stuff and there's some in-person, a day of in-person working with you, right? Like a class, like you run a class 5 times a year for level two. So they have to buy level one, use the product, get certified, go through it. And then to go to level two, they have to pay another $1,500, right? So just by adding a level two or even a level three. Now, obviously you can't go to a million levels, but the point is you can go to level two or three easily by adding more value and therefore charging that customer more, right? So can you add levels to the program, right? And usually the levels are, can you make them better at what they do? Can you make the process easier? Can you make them more profitable? Can you get them better results? Like all the level twos, does the level two have better status? Maybe it's limited in quantities, right? And so when you think about that, something that you are going to buy that has a higher value proposition might have a limitation to it. A level two might, so like a car manufacturer might make, hey, we're gonna make 10,000 of these trucks this year, but only 500 of them are gonna have the supercharger on it and these specific wheels. Now, for an additional 15 grand, you can buy any one of those 1,000 or 500 trucks because it's a level two. It's a higher version and it's limited in quantities, right? So understand that. Number two, can it be reoccurring? Another profit maximizer. Can you create subscription or reoccurring monthly fee? I mean, you've seen Amazon do this, right? You go to buy a product. It's like, hey, do you want to subscribe and save 10% every month? And every month we'll send you a new bottle, new box, new thing, right? So understand subscription works. Netflix, Amazon Prime, that's all subscription. Like think of all the things that you're subscribed to. What can you do or create that you can, or what can you add on to your existing product or service that you have? And you're like, I don't know, Bedros, my product can't have subscription. Let me tell you, there's a lot of apparel companies that I know of that have the Box of the Month Club, right? So Fuel Hunt is exploring that right now. Like, hey, maybe we want to have a Box of the Month Club. And if so, every month we send a unique design that is limited to the people of the Box of the Month Club. And then also every month they get a special discount code that gets them a discount off the new drops for that month or for that quarter, right? Like you can have subscription like that. Trulene, my supplement company. We did this about a year ago. We started subscription by bundling our best products that people used together. So, you know, I told you guys that I use the wellness shot and the greens every day, twice a day, right? So we bundled that up. We started with that product and we bundled that up and we said, hey, look, if you're going to buy that product anyway, each and every month, a box of wellness shots and a container of the greens, you might as well buy the bundle, save 25% every month, and you'll be on our Trulene Club subscription program where every month we will send you another box of each. It's a no-brainer. So it becomes convenient for them and they get a discount and it becomes predictable revenue for us. And therefore it increases our profit margins because now when we go to order more product from the manufacturer, we can knowingly order more because we know that we have several thousands of people on our subscription program, right? So that creates certainty in our business every month that we have regular income scheduled to come in, and that allows us to buy more in bulk, which means we get a discount from the manufacturer. So think about that. And then of course, can you sell it as an experience? That's a profit maximizer. If you can build your status, your personal brand to a level where you can start selling an experience, you can now charge more and therefore increase your profits. I'll give you a great example. Great example. The BMW 7 Series cost $160,000. The Rolls-Royce Ghost cost about $500,000. You may or may not know this, but they are the same car. 75% of those two cars are the same. Rolls-Royce is owned by BMW now. And so the BMW 7 Series that sells for $160,000 shares 70% of the same parts with the Rolls-Royce Ghost that sells for $500,000. Imagine that. But what you're buying is the Rolls-Royce status. You're buying the Rolls-Royce brand. And therefore, you are paying a premium, and therefore, BMW headquarters makes a massive profit when you buy the Ghost versus the BMW, right? When you buy the Rolls-Royce versus the BMW 7 Series. So you gotta ask yourself, what can I do to build my personal brand? We live in a time now where you can use YouTube, podcasting, social media platforms like this that I'm on right now, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, to begin to build your personal brand, to become a celebrity in an industry. And when you become the celebrity in an industry, you rise to the top and you could literally manufacture celebrity of yourself. Like make no mistake about it. It's not like we're walking celebrities. Like when I'm at a gym or a restaurant or I'm in an airport and someone spots me, notices me and hey, Bedros, what's up? What's going on? Oh my God, I can't like, not for a moment am I like, oh my God, I'm a fucking Brad Pitt or I'm a George Clooney. Like I realize I'm not a celebrity. I've manufactured celebrity using social media and platforms to be able to share knowledge, share content, add value. And as a byproduct of doing that, I've increased the worth of my time and being around me. And therefore, when I have a workshop, a seminar, a mastermind, I can charge a premium for it, right? Instead of charging a couple hundred bucks for a two-day workshop, I can charge $5,000 for a two-day workshop. And so understand that you can do that by displaying your knowledge, expertise, wisdom. You can then begin to elevate yourself on this pyramid of hierarchy from being a generalist to a specialist to an expert to a celebrity at the very top of that pyramid, right? And when you become an industry celebrity, you can charge more for the same product or service and therefore increase your profit margins. So that's the beautiful thing about being an entrepreneur, man. There's so many ways you can slice and dice this pie. But what I want you to understand is there are businesses. For example, my dad was trading time for dollars in a tailor shop where he had to open the shop every day. And yes, he could have hired more tailors and it certainly could have been scalable, but he didn't understand scalability. He was a hardworking man and he traded his time for dollars for 30 years and built something for himself, and good for him. Like, I've got so much respect for my dad's hard work ethics. I've got his hard work ethics, but I also have Jim Franco's ability to be able to scale, automate, increase profits, leverage, right? And because of those things, when I take work ethic and the ability to scale and automate, delegate, and leverage, and I put those things together, it's like creating a nuclear bomb as an entrepreneur. And then you become a better leader and you can lead amazing humans who work with you, in line with you, to be able to scale this vision that you all believe in together. Like, how cool is that? It's like working with your best friends, man. And so I want you to understand that you can do this too. Or you could also say, hey man, I'm gonna be a copywriter and I'm gonna work off my laptop, and you can make yourself 15, 20, 30 grand a month being a copywriter or being a phone salesperson, selling for other people. You don't even have to sell your own shit. You can sell for other people and make commission and do it from anywhere and travel the world. The beauty of entrepreneurship allows you to be able to do things on your terms, but you have to understand what types of businesses exist out there, what types of opportunities those businesses give you, and how you should leverage those opportunities to increase scalability and to increase profitability so that you, my friend, can have an awesome life. I hope this has been very valuable to you. If you're looking to make more money, improve your business, start a new business, or to scale an existing business, and if it has, please do me a favor, like and subscribe, leave the comments on the podcast platforms, and be sure to follow us and watch us on Spotify. We are now on the Spotify video network as well. And for all of my friends on YouTube, thank you so much for continuing to grow this show. I love every single one of you across all the platforms. And I just want to let you know one last thing, and you know what's about to come. Average is the enemy. And success is your responsibility, and change can take place in an instant when you are ready to flip the switch. I'll see you later. What's the difference between me and you? Back when Q was rolling with Lorenzo in a Benzo, I was banging with a gang of instrumentals.